as I am changing. Every single move you're making since I've analyzed predictions far beyond the comprehension. I've been tortured with the writhing thoughts that stop a star from shining. Kill me now before I'm sober, so I die before it's over.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Men Insights Podcast. This is going to be a fun one, to say the least, because I'll be recapping WWE's Payback from this past weekend, and I'll also be sharing my thoughts on the firing of CM Punk from AEW. So let's just get right to it, talking about Payback. My initial thoughts, I thought it was another great pay-per-view under the creative of Triple H in the WWE era. For the past year, he has hit the mark on every single show from SummerSlam 2022 up to now, and I have yet to be disappointed by anything Triple H has done. First matchup we had was the steel cage match, Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus. I don't remember who I predicted to be the winner of this one, but that does not matter because this was an absolutely amazing match, and definitely a surefire candidate for match of the year, if I do say so myself, and Michael Cole said as much on the show as well. And just, they beat the hell out of each other in this match, you know. And then especially podcast that I remember from Bruce Pritchard, something to wrestle, there was an episode about Trish Stratus, and he spoke about how Trish was always wanting to do more than what WWE was letting her do at the time. That she was wanting to do the hard-hitting stuff, the hardcore stuff like the men were doing, and she finally got to do that with this match. And she said that she wanted to do a steel cage match before she retires a second time, and she finally got to do that, and goddamn, it was such a phenomenal match. And I mean, nothing that I can say can really do it justice, but just so many spots during this match. I mean, she had just the nastiest knot on her forehead, and when she was hanging off of the top of the cage upside down, looked dangerous, and I was worried that she was going to slip and fall and break her neck. And superplex off the top of the cage, and the bulldog satisfaction off the top rope from the cage. And as I predicted, yeah, Becky Lynch was going to win. I predicted it, that she would win with the manhandle slam off the top rope from the cage, and she won exactly as that. And it was such an amazing, beautiful story told by both women. I mean, Becky Lynch, the best of her generation, Trish Stratus, the best of her generation. And just, it's funny because I was listening to the Wrestling with Freddie podcast, and he said, you know, Lita was his favorite from the Attitude Era, but, and she was mine too. And just, yeah, Trish showed why she is the GOAT of the Attitude Era and Ruthless Aggression Era from the women. And one of my favorite spots was when she did the Widow's Peak, Victoria's finisher, or Tara, if you remember from Impact Wrestling, the Widow's Peak, and then even doing the, you know, holding her head psychotic pose that she would do too. That was probably my favorite moment of it, because just, I was a fan of Victoria as well. And just an amazing match. Like I said, match of the year candidate for sure. Probably Trish's best match in her career. And she's had a lot of great ones. She had great matches with Lita, great matches with Mickie James, great matches with Molly Holly, matches with Victoria. So, but I would say that this was probably her greatest match in her career. And I hope she'll be up for more, because I remember reading something that said she was wanting to do a little bit more, maybe go all the way up to WrestleMania 40. That would be fun, and we'll see how that story goes, because at the end of the match, because Zoey Stark had come in trying to help Trish, but, you know, did not work out that way, and then her and Trish got into it at the end of the match, where Zoey had her moment to shine as well, which was really cool. But we'll see where they go from there. And then from here, we had John Cena come out to talk to the crowd, have a fun little moment. And then The Miz came out, and they had a back-and-forth exchange, and that led to Cena becoming the special guest referee for the match with Miz versus LA Knight. And it's funny, because I don't know how many people caught it, because, you know, I'm not on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now. So I don't know if other fans caught this, that during the kickoff show, when they were showing the graphic for Miz versus LA Knight, it actually showed special guest referee John Cena on the screen. And I caught that immediately, and I was just like, huh, okay. And sure enough, That's exactly what happened on the show. And that, this one was another fun match. Honestly, every match on the show, I was very entertained. None of these matches disappointed or bored me at all. And really, that's all you can really ask for as a wrestling fan, at least for me. And this match was a great job of really showcasing LA Knight and that showing that he can hang with the top stars of WWE, because he's in the ring. And I was even thinking about this afterward, that he shared the same ring with Bray Wyatt and The Undertaker on the Raw 30th anniversary, and sharing the ring here again with Miz and John Cena. So within just 1 year, he's sharing the ring with four former WWE champions and one Hall of Famer, another surefire Hall of Famer in John Cena, and getting the rub, as they say, and really shining like the superstar that we know that he is. And, you know, because he's the one that everybody's talking about, L.A. Knight, yeah. And like I've said before, in last week's episode, I've been a fan of him since seeing him in TNA Wrestling when I first learned who he was. And it was him, Drew Galloway, McIntyre, and I can't remember what the other one's name is. But he was Camacho in WWE, but I don't remember what his name was when he left. But yeah, seeing him there, and then seeing him in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and seeing him in NWA, seeing him again in Impact Wrestling when he was a solo act and winning the world championship there, then coming to NXT and so on. So I'm happy that he's getting a bigger push now, and hopefully it's gonna lead to even more opportunities for LA Knight. And of course, he came out on top, and Cena was a very neutral referee in this match. He got into it with LA Knight, got into it with The Miz, no physical altercations, but he, you know, played his role as he was meant to, and gave LA Knight to shook his hand, raise his arm in victory on the entrance stage. So yeah, LA Knight was victorious, and we'll see where his story goes from here, because this past Monday on Raw, I mean, I did not watch Raw, I was at work, but I saw that there was a Miz TV segment where Miz interviewed John Cena. So I'm guessing that that's going to be probably a match at Fastlane. We shall see how that goes, though, which is just funny, because it's like so many times that Miz and John Cena have crossed their paths, from 2009 when Miz went solo, 2011 for WrestleMania, 2017 for WrestleMania again, and then it looks like they're going to do another thing here. So looking forward to that. Either way, that should be fun, since Cena's going to be around for a little bit longer than expected, you know, with the SAG-AFTRA strike and the writer's strike still going on. But yeah, and moving on, we go to the United States Championship match, Rey Mysterio defending against Austin Theory. And looking at the whole show, remembering how I felt during the show, I would say this was probably the weakest match on the show, but it was still a very good match. I mean, really, when your weakest match on the show is a Rey Mysterio match, that's kind of a good thing, because it's still a very good match. Rey Mysterio, almost 50, putting on banger after banger at his age, still kicking ass and being the superstar that we all love, and just doing it better than some of the people younger than him, and honestly, better than some of the people in AEW, if I say so. But Rey came out on top here. Austin Theory, you know, looked like the superstar that we know that he is becoming as well, and just curious where they're going to go with the story with Rey Mysterio and LWO, and specifically with Santos, and because I don't know if they're going to go with the predictable Santos turning on Rey, you know, it would be mentor versus mentee storyline. But if it does go with that predictable route, I'm okay with it, because it will give Santos the rub and the shine of being in the ring with a Hall of Famer. But yeah, this was a fun match. Theory did well. Rey was phenomenal, as always. And then we come to the Steel City Street Fight for the Undisputed WWE Team Championships. KO and Sammy against Finn Balor and Damian Priest of the Judgment Day. This one was a fun match, an exciting match, and surprisingly bloody match, with the KO busted wide open on the side of his head, which I'm not sure what it was that actually caused that, but hey, I'm okay with it, because I've said it before, when blood helps progress the story, I'm okay with it, but when it's blood for the sake of blood, as is the case with AEW a lot of time, then I can't, I hate it. But Again, not sure when he started bleeding, but it helped progress the story of this match and kind of added that extra drama to the story. And there was that moment that it was, you know, kind of a little goofy segment where it was Finn and Priest Dominic, they threw KO and Sammy over a little barrier thing, and they're strategizing how they're going to win the match. And then when KO and Sammy pop back up, they're wearing Pittsburgh Penguins jerseys and hockey sticks, so, which was kind of a goofy spot, but it was still fun. The crowd was into it. They were hot for the whole thing. And, you know, one of the coolest spots was Kevin Owens embracing his inner Jeff Hardy with the Swanton off the little balcony platform onto Dominic on through the table, which that looked like it hurt KO's tailbone pretty bad, because he landed like boom right there on the floor and just barely missed Dominic, but was able to get him. And then JD McDonagh helped, you know, even, I guess I wouldn't say even the score, but he helped tip the scales in Judgment Day's favor a little bit more. And then Rhea coming in and just tackling KO through the barrier. Was it KO or Sammy? I don't remember. But yeah, her being the badass that she is. And then we, you know, Sammy, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Sammy or KO, it was one of them. I think it was KO. Got the frog splash, was about to get the victory. Then Dominic comes in, hits him with the briefcase. Finn covers over for the 1, 2, 3. And then we got new tag team champions, the Judgment Day, with all the gold. And I'm all for that, because it's just Judgment Day is, they're hitting all the marks right now, and I'm into it. I'm loving the story with Judgment Day. I'm loving the progression of Judgment Day. JD McDonagh giving Damian Priest a brand new Money in the Bank briefcase with the purple and the Senor Money in the Bank logo on there, and that's gonna be a hot item for WWE Shop for a little while for sure, which kind of just gives away that he's not gonna be cashing in immediately in the future. But hey, gotta push the merchandise sales, because, you know, that's a lot of times that's a make or break thing for the brand. But yeah, another great match, and new tag team champions. And then the women's world championship, Raquel Rodriguez versus Rhea Ripley. I enjoyed this match very much as well, and told a very good story between two strong badass women of WWE. And of course Rhea Ripley came out on top, as I already said, Judgment Day, with all the gold. And yeah, I mean, Raquel, she was able to shine as the badass that I know that she is, that we all know that she is. And where she's going to go from here, I'm not sure. It looks like they're going to kind of do another thing with the Women's Tag Team Championships with her from this past Monday, where she had a thing with Chelsea Green. So we'll see how that story progresses from there. I hope that she'll get a stronger singles push going forward. Like, maybe she can even win the Women's Royal Rumble and go on to face Asuka, or, well, I don't know why I said Asuka, whoever's going to be the WWE Women's Champion by then, by WrestleMania, but we'll see how that goes. Yeah, she would be my pick for the Royal Rumble, if they can give her a strong singles push, give her a moment at WrestleMania like that, that'll be fun. And then we come to the main event of the show, the World Heavyweight Championship, Shinsuke Nakamura versus Seth freaking Rollins. Of course, we knew this was going to be a great match. Two of the best athletes in WWE. I really like the video, that package that they showed for Shinsuke's entrance, where it was like an anime manga comic book. That was really, really cool, and really added to that drama and added to that little bit of a flair to Shinsuke's character. And also, they really did such a great job telling the story in this match about Seth Rollins' back, because Shinsuke really put so much emphasis and targeting Rollins' back throughout the match. You know, I think again, Freddie Prinze Jr. in his podcast talking about, like, it was a very old school approach where, you know, you target a body part and you work it throughout the whole match, telling that story, really wearing it down move by move by move. And Rollins selling the hell out of the back injury, and Shinsuke really selling his determination to not just take the World Heavyweight Championship from Seth Rollins, but to also just kind of happen to steal from it was a video wrapping up the Arkham Knight game, the actor that played Scarecrow in there, that he was saying to humiliate him and reduce him to ash. And because he was talking about taking his pride, taking his freedom, and all that stuff. More being more of a psychological thing, you know. Which anyone who knows me knows that I'm very much into the psychological drama, and yeah, another phenomenal wrestling match from the fighting world champion of Seth Rollins, with Rollins winning it cleanly, and then Shinsuke beating him up after the match. And it was cool that we got to see the Great Muta in the crowd for this one as well, and being in attendance, you know, kind of, again, adding that extra little oomph to the story, especially with his connection to Shinsuke, having their match earlier this year in Japan. And now where we go from this with the story between them, because on Raw, Rollins offered him a rematch and Shinsuke said no, but they still beat the hell out of each other afterwards. So it's, again, just telling the story that it's more than just winning the world championship for Shinsuke. It's about destroying Seth Rollins, taking away everything of Seth Rollins, you know. And I'm all for that. I love that. I love long-term storytelling like that. And if they have the rematch, stumbling over my words right now, but that's okay. If they have the rematch at Fastlane, I kind of hope that Shinsuke will win it this time and actually win the championship, because that would just be awesome. And yep, that's my recap for Payback. And it brings me to what was the hot topic of the wrestling community over the weekend: CM Punk being fired by AEW, as announced by AEW on social media. You know, getting ahead of the dirt sheets, which is a cool move and smart move in my opinion, and doing so before Payback, which actually took the spotlight, some of the spotlight, away from Payback, because there was a lot of the social media attention, for at least. And yeah, Tony Khan finally grew some balls and stepped up and did what needed to be done. And yeah, now there's a lot of other stories that have been coming up where he allegedly had an altercation with William Regal last year, and allegedly wanting to come back to WWE. We'll see how that goes, if it's gonna go that route. But it just seems like there's drama that follows CM Punk to every promotion that he's part of. You know, had issues with TNA Wrestling. I'm not sure if he had anything with Ring of Honor, but I know for sure he did have stuff with TNA. And then, of course, his drama with WWE, and then the drama that came to AEW. It's just, I don't know. I mean, as much of a fan as I was of CM Punk's wrestling career, most notably in his WWE run from 2011 to 2013, he is just, there's just so much drama that follows his name and his brand now that I don't think any wrestling company is going to want to work with him unless they want to have that drama. I mean, if it is true that he made amends with WWE, you know, allegedly that he was pitching to make a return to WWE earlier this year, and, you know, I think the Royal Rumble was one of the pitches, but I don't know. And who knows, maybe he will come back to WWE. You know, Survivor Series is going to be in Chicago, maybe he'll pop up there, or maybe he'll be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, win that, and challenge Seth Rollins for the world title at WrestleMania. I don't know, it's so much, and it's just, it hurts me as someone who was such a big fan of CM Punk for so many years, just to see what he has become. Kind of the same way I feel with Bret Hart. Bret Hart is still my all-time favorite professional wrestler, period, bar none. You know, greatest matches that I've ever seen as a wrestling fan, but he has become a bit of a bitter old man as well, and it just kind of hurts to see that. But I mean, if you're in the camp of, you know, all for CM Punk, and you believe all the rumors that it was the Bucks and Omega that instigated a lot of the stuff, you know, that's fine, that's on you. Or if you're on the other side of it, where you believe Punk was the one that instigated everything, again, that's fine, it's your prerogative to feel that way. It's just, there's so much baggage attached to the name and the brand of CM Punk that if I was running a wrestling promotion, you know, I would not want to be associated with that. Yeah, but I am not running a wrestling promotion. I'm just a lonely YouTuber, podcaster, and with his 214 subscribers on YouTube, and however many people that actually listen to me on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. So what do I know? I'm just a fan. I'm not in the industry. And just speaking as a fan. But if he were to come back to WWE, and he was able to work things out with Triple H and other people involved to get past the drama and the bullshit and actually do business, I'm okay with that. That'd be cool. And other great news, as I'm recording this today on September the 7th, Gunther is officially the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. Thank God, breaking the Honky Tonk Man's record, because fuck Honky Tonk Man and his trash gimmick, his trash wrestling, his trash everything. Fuck that guy. Gunther having a phenomenal match with Chad Gable on Raw this past week, having banger after banger of a match during his Intercontinental Championship reign with Sheamus at Clash of the Castle, the triple threat match at WrestleMania this year, and matches that he's had with Drew one-on-one, has matches with Riddle, his breaking the Royal Rumble record as well this year, from as longest entrant from number one, lasting all the way to Cody Rhodes, eliminating him at the end. Now that he has officially broken the Honky Tonk Man's record, if he were to lose the championship now, okay, cool. I would rather he keep it all the way to WrestleMania. I would love that. And be able to lose it in the most epic fashion. But who knows? Maybe he'll lose it to Chad Gable at Fastlane if they do like an Iron Man match or something. Which, really, with the story that they've been telling with Chad Gable, that would be the best way to go right now. Have a 30-minute Iron Man match at Fastlane with him and Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. And for Gable to come out on top, it would be a phenomenal thing. And I don't know, we shall see. Which, yeah, that's going to bring it to the conclusion of this episode of the Man in Science Podcast, episode 147. Thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing, if you are. And if you're not, please do so. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. All the links are in my link tree down there if you're watching this on YouTube or on Spotify, because you can watch the video version on Spotify now too as well. Check all that out there, and support me by purchasing a design from my store. Would love and appreciate anyone who does, especially the people who've been buying the Straight Edge t-shirt that I have on there. That is my biggest seller, which surprises the hell out of me, honestly, especially because I am Straight Edge and proud of that fact, and not because of CM Punk. I've been straight edge my entire life, and I've been straight edge before I even knew what straight edge was. So the fact that that's my hottest selling design from my store just means a lot to me. It really does. And you can also support me by checking out my blog. I've been posting a couple stuff about The Last of Us on there. I have part one and part two of my little series called The Humanity of The Last of Us. I'm working on part three right now. So check the link for that as well. And if you want to reach out to me, you can do so by either commenting on the YouTube video, or you can reach me out on my email, themenatitespodcast@gmail.com. I am not on any social media other than my personal Facebook page. Actually, I do have a Facebook page for the Menatites Podcast now as well, if you would like to check that out. That link is also down there too. And this has been the Menatites Podcast. I hope you all do well. Stay safe. Stay healthy, take care of yourselves and your loved ones, being the wonderful people that I know you are and that you can be. I am Julian, and I will see all of you on the next one. Bye-bye.